IVM.
Hello and welcome to the Wire Talks. I'm Siddharth Bhatia. Almost any service one goes for nowadays, one has to hand over Aadhaar and PAN card details. Aadhaar was originally supposed to be only to ensure that government benefits went to the right person. But now the tax authorities, banks, mobile companies, hospitals, and even the election commission ask for the Aadhaar number. The implications are clear. The details are now known to a variety of institutions and any activity of a citizen can be monitored. The worst part is that in many cases, quite a few cases, these details have been leaked into the public domain and are liable to be misused. The Private Data Information Bill was supposed to address this, but the version presented by the government in 2017 was flawed. Nonetheless, a dialogue was going on to remove these flaws in Parliament and outside when suddenly last week the government withdrew the bill. After 5 years, the Internet Freedom Foundation has been in the forefront of fighting for individual privacy protection. Apar Gupta, who is the executive director of the foundation, is here with us to explain the bill and the implications of the withdrawal. A lawyer by training, he says he's been working for 10 years as a lawyer. Apar now specializes in internet policy and its implication for the citizen, which is you and me. Apar Gupta, welcome to the Wired Talks.
Thank you so much for having me here, Siddharth.
First of all, please explain for the lay audience, and that includes me, why privacy of data is important.
So that anything we have read in the news recently has an element of personal data attached to it. That's because we are living in a digitized society. The Telecom Regulatory Authority of India estimates that there are more than 650 active internet connections in India. And in some cities, such as in Delhi, there are more mobile connections with internet than people itself. In fact, it says that for every one person, there are about 2.5 connections. It means that our personal, professional, social activities are being mediated through technology, and technology at its base exchanges data. But why should it concern an individual? Why should it concern society? And for this, we at the Internet Freedom Foundation actually explain how data protection, which is what this bill is about, is something which can make a huge difference to your life, improve your life, make your digital transactions much more secure. So just think about some issues which have gathered press in the recent past. It may be the Delhi police querying all donor details from a payment processing company because it was hosting a fact-checking website, Alt News, and this was Razorpay. It may be period tracking apps, which are used by women quite often, which are now selling that data to other companies to profile these women, and it can be used for sending all kinds of ads on social media, including your Instagram, which is why a lot of people say, why is this ad being shown to me? It's not because it's only creepy. It's also because it is actually presuming a sense of intimacy with you and knowing you and thereby disturbing you. There are many other issues I can flag, which are very, very vital and can be governed by data protection laws, such as political parties using our data, such as random phone checks by police, such as our virtual assistants, such as Alexa, Siri, or even when we enter a building society these days and we are asked for our number and it goes into apps such as MyGate.
So basically what you're saying is that because of this pressure imposed on me to give my Aadhaar details or telephone details everywhere, and my phone is connected to the internet at all times, I'm a vulnerable person, not merely from private companies, but also from the government, because state agencies like the police can easily, without any kind of control over their regulation, over their activities, track every activity of mine. What time did I log on in the morning? What time did I, how much money I put in the bank? Who did I call? Simple things like that, which I should assume are private only to me.
Yes.
So you've just pointed out a couple of instances, but this is truly dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, it's dangerous because a person is not in control. Now, some people who might be listening to us may be thinking, wow, Apar is an activist, Siddharth is a journalist. But how does it concern me? I do a regular corporate job, I draw a salary. Well, it concerns them because a data protection bill is not only about people who may have something to hide, which is the argument we quite often see. And that's a wrong argument. I'll come to that later. But here's the thing. For every average Indian, data protection is important because data protection gives you the right to access your data from the government as well as from companies. When you can access data they hold about you, you get to know how much they know about you, which is a sense of power, right? How are they using that data? How did they collect it? Did you consent for it? You also have the rights to modify it if it's needing correction, which is the regular example. Why am I getting this message from this bank when I don't have an account there, right? And all of this data can potentially land you in trouble. There are other things with the data protection law. It obligates the government and companies to keep your data securely. So all these thefts, financial frauds which are happening, and you can look at the National Crime Records Bureau reports, it's ballooning because a lot of the personal details which we share with entities over a period of time are collected, profiled, and sometimes used maliciously by people to gain access to our bank accounts or to initiate fraudulent transactions. So Siddharth, I would say that it is an issue about democratic rights, but it's also in the very day-to-day for every ordinary individual. And that's why it's really important for them to understand this.
You know, Apar, how did things reach this pass? Because we all remember, some of us may remember, that there was a time when we were told that this will just be for welfare purposes. Now you can't take a step. You know, I heard of somebody, an old senior citizen who passed away in a hospital. And while he was admitted, they asked for the Aadhaar card details, but we didn't have them because I was helping this family. And at the end of it, when he passed away, they said, but we need to have the Aadhaar details to release the body. Now, they couldn't show us any documentation for that. The family was distraught. And finally, when the family took the body to the crematorium, they brought it up, but they brought it up. I could see that they were very weak about it. So we pushed our way through. But this is atrocious. How did things reach this pass?
Actually, Siddharth, there's been a cross-partisan belief in technology overcoming all kinds of social problems in Indian society. India being a very unequal country by itself, technology is quite often seen as something which can deliver us the welfare, the rights which we need. But that's not being realized. And just answering one part of your question in which you were starting out and you're saying that Aadhaar by itself was supposed to be a welfare delivery system. Well, the Aadhaar Act does say that it's applicable and can be made mandatory. And that's what the Supreme Court judgment also says. I was a lawyer, actually, in that case. And it says that whenever you're drawing any benefit which is linked to the Consolidated Fund of India under the Aadhaar Act, the government can compulsorily require you to share your Aadhaar details to check for what was reasoned as duplication. This picked up from that trope that for every 1 rupee spent, only 10 paise reaches the beneficiary. So to check duplication, that one person is not drawing benefits under the names of five others or etc., that kind of leakage. But actually, Aadhaar has always been a system which has been envisioned by its proponent, Mr. Nandan Nilekani, as being a much more universalized system. Yesterday, I was reading his book with Viral Shah called Rebooting India. It has a chapter actually on why Aadhaar needs to be linked to electoral rolls, which has happened in a recent session of parliament. And now this month, the Election Commission will start linking Aadhaar with electoral rolls. He says the same deduplication can help ensure that bogus voting does not happen. And in fact, the genesis of the Aadhaar project itself was through a report of the Technology Advisory Group for Unique Projects. And it was given on January 31st, 2011. Again, Mr. Nilekani to Pranab Mukherjee was the Minister of Finance for that time. And that says that Aadhaar needs to be linked to banking, mobile services, and bank accounts. It's very essential in this entire panoply to ensure that the government knows enough about citizens and can then effectively play its paternalistic welfare role. However, what's happened is that the government, while doing that, has not taken into account the risks and the dangers which present through such a centralized technology system such as Aadhaar. It's not made a data protection authority till now, and we've been lagging behind. It's not taken into account concerns about surveillance, and it's not taken into account a realization that technology sometimes, when is introduced, also results in new problems. And what are these new problems? These new problems, as per the Computer Accounts General's audit of Aadhaar, which has been recently been made. This is the government's own audit, okay? And it's revealing that there's a large number of exclusion happening due to Aadhaar. And that will happen in any technology system, because you're trying to implement technology either directly through smartphones, or you're trying to do it through what is called as common service centers. But the thing is, India doesn't have that level of teleconnectivity in most of the districts. A lot of people are illiterate. A lot of people don't know how to access technology even through an intermediary. And it causes exclusion. For instance, biometric verification of irises and thumbprints does exclude people who have motiabind, who are old, who are manual field hands by itself. So I'll stop here, Siddharth, but I think a much more holistic social examination of technology, which could have been drawn from an interdisciplinary approach, has been lacking. We've trusted technologists and technology too heavily in the recent past.
Yeah, that would be it. No, and I think anyone who's read even books of the 1960s and 70s realizes that technology can be a monster and go against what you want it to be used for. But tell me this, wasn't the Data Protection Bill supposed to address some of this?
Yes, and this is something which has been a core promise by not only this government, but also, let me go back to the timeline of 2011 when I was saying the PAGUP report. So around that time, the Planning Commission constituted an expert working group under Justice A.P. Shah, the former Chief Justice of the High Court of Delhi, who did give a report recommending a data protection law and identifying 9 privacy principles, which proceed from the principle of consent, that each person, that each Indian needs to consent in terms of turning over their data and needs to know why that data is being turned over, because it's a kind of a power. Again, when the state or private company knows about your most intimate details, your personal details over a period of time, or can collect them, you need to be the person in charge rather than the government or that company. There also may be certain situations in which consent may not be there, but still there needs to be a regulation for how this data is turned over, how is it used, where, how it is stored. And picking up from the Justice A.P. Shah Committee report, there was some movement by the Department of Personnel and Training to draft what is called as a privacy bill. And the privacy bill was looking at 2 things, data protection and surveillance. Now, let me break this down. What is data protection? What is surveillance reform? Data protection is when you turn over your personal details, anything which identifies you, which can be your biometrics, but can also be your name and phone number, a third party, based on the principle of consent, in which you knowingly know you're turning over this data. And that's the regular rule of how personal data is collected about a person. But what about those instances in which surveillance for national security, criminal investigation is needed? That is called surveillance, when a person is not told their data is being collected. And India woefully lacks in regulation on both aspects. So in 2014, the Department of Personnel and Training started drafting a Privacy Act, which had both data protection and surveillance reform. But it came under an incredible amount of friction and obstruction by the intelligence community in India. They said, oh, we won't be able to safeguard national security, et cetera, if this privacy bill goes through. And it was stalled in 2014. It died there. Now, you have the new government come in, the Modi government come in, and it promises again that with the Digital India program, we will make a data protection law. But its promise comes when the Aadhaar and the right to privacy hearings start being activated. So it's almost as if the government is reacting to what the Supreme Court may do when it pronounces a right to privacy judgment. And I was a lawyer there, so I saw how the expert committee then was set up under Justice B.N. Shri Krishna. And this was during the midst of those hearings. What happens then is that this committee set up, the right to privacy judgment comes in 2017 in August, right? And that says that privacy is linked to all our fundamental rights, make a data protection law. The Supreme Court notes this committee has been set up. This committee gives its report next year in 2018. And the government actually says we are studying it, et cetera, et cetera. We'll come out with a law.
No, that's the usual.
But nothing actually happens. And then there is a break of elections. And in fact, there's even an op-ed by Ravi Shankar Prasad, cabinet minister for that time. And he says, we'll bring in a law. But a law has not come. I can even update what's happened in the recent past. But according to me, it's been a decade-long process of setting public expectations for a data protection and privacy law, which have been broken repeatedly.
No. So basically, India is one of the few countries, especially a country of this size and so much penetration of the internet, which does not have data protection. And I have absolutely known this. And if it's taken 10 years, it could take another 10 years. And basically, till then, I am at the mercy of both tech companies and the government. We should not absolve the tech companies here. One of the reactions I saw after this bill was suddenly withdrawn, and you have to tell us why you think it was suddenly withdrawn after 5 years, because in these 5 years, some discussions in Parliament must have taken place, was that the tech companies have won. So what I need to know from you is, A, why do you think it was withdrawn? And was there any process that it was happening which was for the good? And two, what does it imply?
So I think a lot of the conversation around data protection in India has been that, wow, it's going to cause such a tremendous compliance burden. That's the word they use, quote unquote, compliance burden on private companies, right? And I think that's somewhat of a lobbyist's term because it's not actually reflecting reality. The reality is that large technology companies gather data with questionable consent and then profile people, and the entire business model relies on something called surveillance capitalism. Now, as much as it is resulting in corporate profit, which is completely unregulated and some people may have an issue with it, the deeper issue which is happening is that the engineering choices which are being made to serve these ads is essentially to gather more and more personal data, which is then sold to advertisers. And when you sell it to advertisers, then the advertisers can also be political parties. It can also be people who are trying to influence how Indian society and people are behaving with each other. It can be used in very dangerous ways as well to push micro credit lending itself, which is pushed people towards suicide in India. So, given the amount of social issues which are there and being caused, actual injuries which are being caused to people, I think the argument which is quite often made by private companies that this bill is not good, the bill will place compliance on us, is not well made out. It's actually almost like an argument by car manufacturers at a point in time that, well, seatbelts will increase the cost of a car manufacturer and consumers will have to pay more. As a society, we have made a choice that technology digitization has social impacts. And thereby, to make sure those impacts are positive and not negative, we need regulation given the existence of what is called as a market failure, which is these companies putting in privacy protections by themselves. Now, why has the government withdrawn it is a moot question, actually, but is to some extent answered in a separate note which was circulated by Mr. Ashwini Vaishnav, who is the current cabinet minister for the Ministry of Electronics and Information Technology. In this note, which was circulated to members of parliament, he said that considering the report of the joint committee of parliament, a comprehensive legal framework is being worked on. He didn't give much details as to what is this comprehensive legal framework, but we can guess some bits of it from past press coverage in 2022. Firstly, the junior minister, the minister for state, Mr. Rajesh Chandrasekhar, has been engaging extensively with the press, where he has been focusing on India's path to economic development, having technology as a core component, where the $5 trillion economy target includes a $1 trillion economy GDP target from the technology sector itself. Secondly, he keeps repeating that India needs to make tech unicorns, which is essentially a company having a $1 billion valuation every day, in a sense, right? And these may not be bad goals. It, of course, provides for employment. But I think it's that concern that this laissez-faire, Wild West which is there for personal data, which is fueling this kind of economic growth, needs to be continued irrespective of the impacts it has on people. For instance, let me name one company, Byju's, and let me name the impact it's had on people. A lot of people say it's India's biggest unicorn, right? But you have so much press which says that its practices are predatory, it missells products to young people, as well as there is a huge amount of concern that it, how it uses data with respect to minors and how it monetizes them, given its privacy policy is not the best. So you need a data protection authority to ensure that companies such as Byju's make their processes in such a way which are not inefficient cars without seat belts, having poor emission standards, but actually implementing good technology and being for future ready. Ultimately, if India wants to build for the world, a much more long-term view is to have data protection, because that guarantees user trust, and then our companies can build for the world, because the Europeans already have the general data protection regulation. The United States is talking about it. And as per Graham Greenleaf, who's a professor, India ranks very poorly compared to most common law countries in its absence and complete legal vacuum of not having a data protection law.
We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to the Wire Talks.
But, you know, Apar, you sound as though you are unconvinced that the new piece of paper or the act that the government is going to, or it's preparing, you use it phrases like the Wild West or what? Data protection.
Yeah.
Okay. So, again, this question is in two parts. One, do you think that there was any positive outcome possible in the old one, given the amount of discussion that was going on within and outside, activists like you, your organization, which does a lot of thorough work, and knowledgeable MPs who were talking inside, and the government, the give and take that happens in parliament. So the first part of the question is, do you think something good would have come out? And how can you be so sure that what will now come out will not be good?
So Siddharth, what you're pointing to is, it was the law good itself? Was the proposal good? If it would have passed, would it have protected people in that ideal way which is required? And the law had a lot of problems.
No. I need to slightly finesse that the bill to begin with may have had all kinds of issues, but there was a hope of reaching that point with the discussions.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Because if you look at the JPC report, it was making things worse in a lot of ways, right? So after the Shri Krishna bill was given to the ministry brought in the bill to parliament after making changes, which was tabled as the Personal Data Protection Bill of 2019. And when this was introduced, Justice B.N. Shri Krishna said it has the potential of turning India into an Orwellian state. And when the JPC gave its report, he said that my fears have been confirmed, etc. So the bill had a lot of problems. It gave large carve-outs to the government to not take consent and gather data. It made the Data Protection Authority, which would be the body enforcing this law, completely subservient to the government, because the selection committee, as well as the appointment criteria, was completely up to the government. It would have had senior government bureaucrats had ministerial oversight. So in a sense, the body would not be very effective in making sure that the government was respecting data protection. There were a lot of issues. But to scrap this entire proposal is to scrap a five-year-old process. We should not also forget that the JPC report had about five dissent notes from members of parliament, and all of that could have been considered. A public consultation could have been done, and data protection law could have been made. Instead, what do we have? We have this nebulous statement that a comprehensive legal framework is being worked upon. What is this comprehensive legal framework? We don't have any details. Is there a white paper? It's not there. Is there any timeline indicated? We are told in press, not on the floor of parliament, not through the ministry website, soon. It may be in the winter session. But why should we trust the government when the same cabinet minister in February, and this is a reported remark, I would encourage people to look it up, he says that we are going to pass the data protection bill in parliament in the monsoon session. And he says we hope to do it in the budget session. So what should we rely upon? There's not only a sense of of confusion, there's a sense of suspicion that does the government actually intend to bring out a data protection law because it may act against its own interests by bringing a independent regulatory oversight over it. The second question which you are asking is that also that what is being proposed. So some media reports are saying that what we may have is a Digital India Act, a bigger law which has data protection, provisions for innovation, etc. Well, all of that sounds fine. And one can look at Europe. Europe has a comprehensive data strategy, a digital strategy, and it is proposing 3 or 4 new laws in addition to what it's already done in the past, which is the General Data Protection Regulation. It's data protection law. So if you don't make this law right now, you are not being able to think about the other aspects where digitization and technologies touching upon your lives. For instance, how should the government share data, which is public data actually, without impacting privacy? How should large gatekeepers and Silicon Valley platforms be governed beyond data protection? Because there are more issues which emerge. For instance, their gatekeeping power. For instance, Amazon allowing somebody or not allowing somebody to be on its website, etc., etc. These issues can only be considered because technology is touching upon a broad area of our lives, not through one comprehensive law, but through a data protection law at first, which is good, rights respecting, and then through other laws. Because one thing I'd just like to end by saying, like, a lot of people describe the age we are living in when they're talking about it a bit more optimistically as the fourth industrial revolution in a way, right? And if you look at the original industrial revolution, it led to a lot of problems in the domains of labor, which is why you have the Minimum Wages Act, the Factories Act, the Boilers Act. It led to a lot of problems with respect to the environment, which is why you have the Air Act, the Water Act, et cetera, et cetera. So the issues similarly with technology are very broad. And if we don't start legislating specifically for the problems which have been identified through a decade-long process, it just means deferral as a method of denial of regulation itself.
I'll go back on a statement you made just now in this course of this particular answer. Why should we trust the government? And basically, you are saying that you are suspicious of its intentions, not lack of ability, but its very intentions.
Yes, that is correct. So the normal rule one should adopt is always to extend good faith to individuals and institutions. However, good faith is not a presumption which is fixed in stone. Based on recent instances in which ministerial statements are not pointing to any clear path forward on regulation of the technology sector, specifically with respect to data protection, surveillance reform, all of this becomes questionable. Siddharth, I would like people to think about that. How is our data gathered and how are people profiled and targeted close to elections? How are political parties gathering our data? Wouldn't it impact the interests of the power center, not only of this government, but also other persons as well? Secondly, think about Pegasus. These are all issues which impact the very roots of Indian democracy, which is why this suspicion arises from me, which is why I say this good faith, which we should extend to people and institutions, needs to now actually be built by active outreach by the government. So what should it do? It should at least, at the very least, announce what is the contents of this comprehensive legal framework, which is, quote unquote, also being worked upon. We don't know who's working about on it. Who are the contractors? Is there an expert group? What are the terms of reference? What are the timelines? How a public consultation will be done, etc., etc., etc. So that is an absence of movement till this sudden withdrawal, which was done on 3rd August of the data protection bill, which draws suspicion.
India is without a data protection bill. Can you point to some really good ones across the world?
There are no good ones, Siddharth. There are all learning ones. They're in a process of improvement. So if you look at Britain by itself, it's had a Data Protection Act for a long period of time. It's gone through a process of changes. You look at Europe, it has the General Data Protection Regulation, but it has also made the European Commission has also made a broader digital strategy. A lot of other countries also have good data protection laws. I would say decent and in a process of learning. That's also because a lot of data protection issues which are emerging are with a industry sector which sees a very rapid pace, exponential pace of change in its business models, engineering practices, and also forms and methods of data collection. So you can even have much more specific ones. For instance, facial recognition systems and its use in public spaces. There are some laws at the county, district level in the United States which regulate them. But then you look at India and we have a complete legal vacuum. So in broad spaces, you can look at a general data protection law. In specific spaces, you can look at technology-specific regulations such as for facial recognition systems itself.
You are aware of the way facial recognition has already gone berserk in Hyderabad and maybe in other places and all that. And there have been instances, if you have seen the documentary, which I did a podcast on coded bias, where somebody can be stopped from entering their own building because their face was not recognized. And this is not only plus what's happening in China, of course, but what's happening in England, where the facial recognition software cannot recognize people of color. So these things can really, are liable to be misused, and perhaps liable to be misused because they are intent on being misused. See, that's my understanding is that sometimes these things happen by accident because they're a learning process. Sometimes they happen because they are willed to happen. We won't go into facial recognition right now. You mentioned something also very provocative of political parties gaining access to your data before an election. We all remember Cambridge Analytica. So is the genie out of the bottle if it's going to take another 3 or 4 years and you have your suspicions about the new this? Am I as a citizen doomed? Are unprivileged citizens completely in the hands of the state and of private companies? And of loan-giving apps?
So Siddharth, it's somewhat of a disappointment that this law did not get reintroduced as a data protection bill. But I think it also opens up a space and like a much more optimistic reading. Maybe that given that all that it's happening in our country, also the use of Pegasus, the use by political parties, we should push for a much more comprehensive privacy law, which takes into account both data protection as well as surveillance reform. In fact, even if this law in its current state would have been passed, it provided for a 2-year transitory period, which means that after Parliament passes it, for about 2 years, the law would not be enforced. It would give time to businesses and to government departments to get ready for this law. So even if this law would pass today, it would only come into effect on 2024. So it's so that what I'd like to also indicate as the measure of hope is that when we look at data protection, we are fighting against very powerful interests on the behalf of individuals. Day-to-day people are agitating it. But privacy has not taken root even today, despite digitization, but will take root in time when people start understanding the power it has, where their personal data needs to be protected beyond the metropolitan classes. And that's already started happening. And this takes a period of time in our polity. And I draw a lot of inspiration from the environmental and the gender rights movement in India, which have been there for close to a century very actively, if not decades, and keep working on these issues. That's because you never truly win on citizen rights issues. Liberty as well as social justice requires not only constant vigilance, but organization and advocacy. So it's in the nature of our work, and that's a collective task for all of us.
In my experience on many such issues, where, as you pointed out, that it's a constant battle, the environment being one of them, it goes back to the 60s and 70s. When it all started, that there was the CHIPCO movement and all that. And now people are very, very young. People are really very, very conscious of the environment. By the time the things have gone worse, but there is consciousness also. And the same thing applies to gender rights. The same thing applies to trans rights and so many other things. Yes, many start at the metropolitan level, but many start at the village level.
Yes.
Environment certainly started at the village level.
Yes.
So, yes, I think that hope is valid. You remember a few years ago how Internet One was buried because of organizations and advocates such as you and yours, where people shouted and 100 crore, was it Net One or neutral?
Net neutrality.
But 100 crores worth of advertising went down the tube.
Yes.
Because of the outcry. So things do happen. I, for one, think this government will have to at some stage listen. The bill was 5 years down the drain, yes, but who knows, with the work that will be done now, this government will be perhaps forced to add certain provisions at least. Who knows? So let's wait to see. Would you say that it's prudent to wait and see? Or just lapse into some kind of hopelessness?
Given the work which we do, we think that things won't happen by themselves. I don't think so. Being a witness is the approach to take here. Because one should also remember that the government is pushing through legislation which expands its power and ability to collect data. Either one example I gave was a linking of Aadhaar with electoral rolls. The second example I'll give is the Criminal Procedure Identification Act 2022, in which again biometric samples can be taken from suspects and be databased. That's the recent law which is passed. But at the ministry level also, they're coming out with really, really awful and strange policies, which they sometimes do take back after public outcry. One was the India Data Accessibility and Use Policy, which initially said that our data, which is kept by government ministries, can be sold by them. So the government would have a fiscal and a revenue incentive in gathering more data and selling it. And that's also in the National Economic Survey reports from a few years back. So these kind of policies are pushing ahead with signals that there is a continuing incentive beyond being sympathetic to those, I would say, incorrect concerns around compliance costs for businesses, where the government itself does not only not want the regulation, but wants to increase its power, its ability to sell citizen data, et cetera, et cetera. So I would say, rather than wait and watch, let the events of the past decade, especially the past 5 years, inform our worldview, in which we know that personal data is very important. A law for that is very much needed, and it won't happen by itself. We'll have to push this in conversations. We'll have to keep agitating for this.
Lastly, I want to ask you a question regarding what you guys are doing and what others like you are doing. Do you get a hearing if you push hard enough?
Yes, certainly. So the government is not a monolith by itself. We do participate in public consultations. Like, of course, the format and the level of participation may not be a guarantee. You may not have an equal seat on the table. That's what I like to indicate. But if you push enough, you do get invited for public consultations. The government does it at the ministerial level, but it may not actually listen to you and the concerns which you are raising. It may pass that into law. And then, of course, you go to court and you challenge it, right? And it's not as if the courts are also, as many people would say, completely compromised. That may happen in certain specific categories of cases. But if you look at certain things which have come to pass, which would impact an individual's privacy, as well as freedom of speech with respect to technologies, just look at the IT rules which were made in 2021, in which three different high courts have given stay orders. And we've been involved in two of them. So I would say, as long as we do our work and we do that very carefully, being objective, also supporting certain policies, certain things, and engaging with institutional process, not only at the government level, but at the institutional level, there is a fair chance, even in today's climate, in getting some kinds of incremental victories and positive movements towards data protection. Of course, none of this happens, Siddharth, without large citizen mobilization, online or offline, without large consciousness and social values in favor of these goals. For instance, you took the example of net neutrality. We would not have one net neutrality against the telecom companies as well as Facebook if people would not have sent those emails to the Telecom Regulatory Authority of India in a public consultation. So that's a much more important element of the work. That's the much more tougher part of our work. It's not getting a hearing from the government. It's maintaining that faith of every ordinary person and making them aware enough to engage with the government consultation process, knowing that these citizen issues, these public policy conversations need to reach the actual people who are impacted, the public.
Speaking of Pegasus, since you've been mentioning it two or three times, the committee is supposed to have submitted its report.
Yes, and
reports are indicating, we will not draw any conclusions that Pegasus was not bought by any government organization. But we'll wait. I think, as you pointed out, pushing, shoving, citizens' partnership does make a difference in some cases. So let's hope. On that note of hope, we'll end this conversation. Thank you, Apar. And more power to the Internet Freedom Foundation, which is doing such stellar work. And that was Apar Gupta, Executive Director of the Internet Freedom Foundation, which is a, I would say, an NGO, a not-for-profit body of citizens, of lawyers, which does some good work on trying to push the citizen's case when it comes to data privacy and associated issues. This conversation becomes extremely important given that the Data Protection Bill was suddenly, after 5 years of consultations, withdrawn from Parliament last week. We'll be back again next week with another guest. Till then, from me, Siddharth Bhatia, and the rest of the Wire Talks team, goodbye. You can check out this podcast and other interesting ones on the Wire website, the IVM podcast website, app, or wherever else that you get your podcasts. Goodbye from me, Siddharth Bhatia, and the Wire Talks podcast team.